This is episode 143 of the Anarchist News Podcast, which covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist site, anarchistnews.org. What's new this week? 20 Years Beyond Seattle, from C4SS by Willie Gillis. Well, years of writing apparently sometimes pays off. This is much better written than most of Gillis's pieces, which tend toward wordiness, lack of connection between ideas, and plenty of straw folks. Here he reflects on the significance of Seattle in 1999, the various levels of conflict, some of which he says anarchists lost, and some they/we won. He takes an anti-crime think pro-expert tone, which makes sense since he probably considers himself an expert, being a black diaper baby and all. Quote, "But the truth is we are few. Anarchist values are not popular. We are a radical bunch, taking things to the root, being consistent. It's easy to briefly sell a fuzzy after-image of anarchism when you speak in loose applause lines, but when you get to the heart, most folks peel away. Everyone's already an anarchist because they don't need cops to tell them how to order pizza in a group. Okay, now that you're here, anarchism is actually a philosophy of infinite personal responsibility, because embracing agency is hard. It means thinking out solutions rather than passively inheriting defaults. And, oh yeah, we usually lose. We throw ourselves into the gears because it's the right thing to do, not because we're guaranteed a victory. We're not the strongest team, we're the smallest team. We're the team that asks the most." Unquote. So, per usual, the easiest disagreement here is the dualism. Anarchy and anarchisms are both many and contradictory, but at least here his argument hangs together, and his prematurely wizened little 13-year-old soul is adorable. Story 2. Manchester Anarchist Book Fair. So short! Quote, "Interested in finding out more about anarchist ideas? Live in the frozen north of England or don't mind trekking there? Free next weekend? Come along to the Manchester and Salford Anarchist Book Fair 2019 on Saturday, December 7th at the People's History Museum," unquote. And the flyer shows a classic room cartoon with a big headline, "What is anarchism?" Maybe someone will give us a report back and tell us what anarchism is? Story 3, From Nukes to Occupy, from the Reds at Radical Education Department by Robin J. Cartwright. Ah, history pieces. They can be good for introducing readers to groups, people, and concepts that were and may still be significant, but you can never read just one. And the more authoritative a history sounds, the more salt it requires. This is a history of consensus process in the left in the U.S. and what the author calls the NDA, for Nonviolent Direct Action, movement. Also, it gave Jackie flashbacks to some boring-ass conversations. Quote, "Today, rhetoric about being nonviolent is often associated with liberals or moderate leftists, but it was not perceived that way in its heyday. It was by some people. Radical supporters of nonviolence thought that since violence is a central feature of contemporary society, a complete rejection of all violence is actually more revolutionary than radicals who maintain the need for some level of violence. In the later part of the Clamshell Alliance, some activists wanted to use wire cutters to cut open a fence around a nuclear power plant. Other activists objected they should not do this because cutting through fences was violent and consequently would cause greater repression and thus lower turnout for the second occupation. Those who wanted to cut open the fence accepted nonviolence but maintained that fence cutting did not count as violence. If everyone agrees that we should never do anything violent, what counts and does not count as violence becomes very important and a source of conflict," unquote. This piece is self-congratulatory, overgeneralizing about admittedly common instances of nonviolence promoters being hypocritical. We all know there are hypocrites everywhere. Story 4. The Power of the Swamp Against All Nationalism, from Malcontent Editions, Catalonia. This is by someone who is fed up with the shallow thinking of people talking about Catalonia's relationship to Spain and the independence thereof. Quote, "What's most prominent about the situation in Catalonia during the past few years has not been the permanent mobilization, the number of people who have participated in it, or the content of the reclamations. What calls the attention most is the absence of an unmistaken contestation of the procès, which doesn't come from Spanish nationalist positions, in a game of mirrors between reactionary images," unquote. Yep. Not a ton going on in this piece, but rejecting nationalism isn't exactly controversial for anarchists. Oh, right, until it is. Story 5. Chilean anarchist Rodrigo Lanza sentenced to 5 years in prison in Spain, from Abolition Media Worldwide, aka AMWEnglish.com. This is mostly the background of this person who seems to have been falsely accused of murdering someone. Quote, to all this, it should be added that Rodri had also been sentenced in 2008 to 5 years in prison for allegedly leaving a Barcelona urban guard, a quadriplegic, during the eviction of a squatter in the famous 4F case. He is also one of the protagonists of the popular documentary Ciutat Morta, which exposed all the regularities of the case, how random the sentences were, and the torture suffered by detainees who were not investigated by any judicial authority. With his new detention, the police and politicians have been able to claim revenge, unquote. 5 years for murder might seem late, but for self-defense, it's one of many outrages. Story 6. Report by anarchists on revolt in Chile, November 10th to November 21st, from AMW English. A daily listing of events and feelings over 11 days of resistance. Quote, by way of examples, in Viña del Mar, unknown people attacked the house of a major of police, and several cops whose homes have been lined with threats and their vehicles vandalized. Protesters attacked Tejas Verde barracks and burned parts of their facilities in San Antonio. A church burns in the tourist district of La Estrella de Santiago. In the city of Los Andes, hooded ones collectively expropriate a pharmacy to take diapers and cleaning supplies to a nursing home. In Talca, they burn the parliamentary seat of the ultra-right Senator Juan Antonio Coloma. Hooded ones set fire to the Hacienda Gualcha restaurant meters from the zero zone. In the center of Santiago, the riots extend into the night. With laser pointers, the protesters take down a police drone, and hooded ones almost destroy an armored water launcher. Unquote. It's worth reading this for yourself. No analysis to speak of, but the excitement of the moment. Obviously triumphalist and one-sided, but still. Story 7. Anarchist arrested for alleged bomb manufacture, from Freedom News UK. In Italy, Giuseppe Sciacca is arrested based on sweat on a 9-volt battery related to an attack against a detention center in Turin. The attack is connected to ongoing resistance to migration policies and part of Operation Scintilla, which has, quote, expanded into a marked crackdown on anarchists in the region, as police say they have linked to the detainees to more than 20 attacks in recent years, unquote. Anon points out that sweating on batteries is not a crime. Story 8. Mortification of the flesh. Fragments toward a mystical anarchy. Individualist anarchist thought with Greek footnotes. Also, Christian overtones. Ew. Calling a piece, quote, fragments of, unquote, is a known tactic. One of my friends has used it. And it's also in the title of a poorly thought-out book by David Graeber. What is the point of publishing a series of possibly related little pieces of either one or many theories? For me, the point would be to get feedback from people who are known to me so that I could flesh out my thinking and or articulate it better. But perhaps there's also the more open-ended goal of throwing out things that sort of make sense so that other people can take them away and make their own nests out of them. Interesting topics are raised, have been raised, will continue to be raised. If this is the first time you've found these juxtapositions, have fun. Story 9. The Savage Beauty of the Ukrainian Anarchists, from Transmetropolitan Review. The first sentence is so typical of the Transmetropolitan Project, quote, it's not surprising no one heard about this, unquote. Since it's referring to Ukrainian anarchist action that was posted on Anarchist News, it's clear that Transmetropolitan A doesn't read Anarchist News and or B doesn't think Anarchist News readers are worth talking to. Anyway, continues the decent writing, quasi-mystical, loosely connected, loosely accurate, mosaic-y storytelling that the project has been doing sporadically for years. Quote, unfortunately, the Ukrainian anarchists have always been the proverbial weather vane of history. Exactly one century ago, the Black Army was fighting both the Whites and the Reds in a battle that determined the fate of both Ukraine and Russia. Obviously, they lost. Otherwise, we wouldn't be living in this horrible reality. But those Ukrainian anarchists presented an alternative vision to the state fascism of the Bolsheviks and the state fascism of the kings and capitalists. The fact that it was brutally eradicated by both sides should tell you all you need to know about how dangerous this vision was to the forces of domination that control our world. Thankfully, that vision is still dangerous, and today's Ukrainian anarchists are still positioned in the exact center of history. It's not a fun place to be, unquote. The outskirts of history aren't much fun either, right? Also, a couple interesting comments in the thread. Story 10. Interview. Tomás Ibáñez on Power and Modern Anarchy. From freedomnews.org.uk. An interview from 2014 that is for some reason being published now. Quote, question, you also make reference to the guardians of the temple who court an embalmed anarchism. against threats to the survival of anarchism. Who are the guardians of the temple? What anarchism do they pretend to preserve against the forces of change? Response. I say in the book that for some time I warred against the guardians of the temple, and in effect, during the years of my most intense anarchist militancy, that is, from the beginnings of the 1960s until the 1980s, they were a serious problem in the heart of the libertarian movement in France, Italy, or Spain. That's just to cite the examples that I am more familiar with. Their desire to preserve the purity of inherited anarchism, to avoid any contamination by ideas or practices that come from outside their faith, almost religious in the unquestionable superiority of anarchism, and their dedication to the task of overseeing the immutability of its essence, closed them in a dogmatism and a sectarianism incompatible with any minimally anarchist sensibility. The expulsions, the disqualifications, the splits were frequent. Today, the very force of change has emptied sectarian proclivities of any energy, and the guardians of the temple no longer represent a major problem, though it is worth remaining attentive to eventual reappearances of fundamentalist attitudes." Unquote. Unfortunately, that kind of critique is easy to point in lots of directions, so the people who I think need to pay attention to it are no doubt waiting for me to read it and change my behavior. Four fingers pointing back at you! Story 11. The Revolt in Iran and Iraq and Lebanon, from anarchistcommunism.org. Resistance on all fronts is rising, it seems, but some resistances are more beautiful than others. Quote, "The petrol price rise was a catalyst for the growing anger at years of austerity, mass unemployment, corruption, and the widening gap between the rich and the poor. The regime was panicked into paying subsidies into people's bank accounts in what are promised to be monthly payments. More recently, the regime has been forced to admit that 200,000 people took part in demonstrations and that 731 bank branches were set on fire and that 50 military and police stations and barracks were attacked. Some of the most intense unrest was in poor neighborhoods in the capital, Tehran. The demonstrations were broken up by regime forces using live ammunition and tear gas, it was admitted, but there was a reluctance to reveal how many had been killed or injured. An attempt to seize the headquarters of the state broadcasters, seen widely as a lying mouthpiece of the regime, were foiled." Unquote. Most people know that politicians lie. I'm not sure it's better when they tell the truth, but that pondering is for another time. Story 12. Santiago, 42nd Day of Social Uprising by ANA, from ainfos.org. The continuing saga of machine translation, aka puzzling through the words to get at the meaning, episode 341,056. The gist seems to be that the state in Santiago is fear-mongering in an attempt to make the rebellious back down and calm down. Quote, "Undoubtedly, private property is part of what we want to destroy, but today our goals are full of strategic symbolism. If the attack on any location needs explanation, it's not symbolic enough. Note, I think that means it's too abstract, right? End note. An interim solution would be self-defense committees, but our inexperience and ineffectiveness in these practices paves the way for the yellow vests that are beginning to arm themselves with an undeniable fascistoid breath. May the militias turn to the streets is the speech repeated by lovers of the neoliberal system, although in their pockets, money has always shown for its absence. The sad reality is that capitalism is so internalized in a percentage of the oppressed and exploited that commodity and its places of supply are more important than the lives of other beings. To them, work, money, and consumption are superior goods worth much more than 100 people with mutilated eyes." Unquote. Indeed. Story 13. German police union website hacked by anonymous anarchist agency, from anarchists worldwide. Quote, "It happened in response to the cops openly protecting fascists who openly organize, and not just any fascists, but fascists who are organized within the police. Ende Gelände, a climate justice movement, announced that they were planning to disrupt the coal industry in an area of Germany called Lausitz. Several cops who were in the office to counter the climate justice activists on the announced day have been seen on images that circulated in Nazi chat. It was showing them in front of a wall with fascist symbols and a big tag saying, Stop Ende Gelände. It got leaked in response and created an outcry against fascists organizing within the police." Unquote. A website was defaced. We need more Jeremy Hammonds. Story 14. Alan Moore, anarchist watchman, creator to vote in first election in 40 years, from theindependent.co.uk. Wasn't it just last week that Alan Moore was being awesome? maybe the week before. Darn. Well, we all make our own compromises with the world as it is, and celebrity status makes all our contradictions more glaring. I can certainly understand being flummoxed by a Trumpian figure, not to say that all politicians look alike or anything. Audio and video. The Ex-Worker Podcast, number 72. 2 hours and 23 minutes. Yeesh. Brought to you with multiple thanks by the ongoing, so far month-long street protests in Santiago, Chile. An interview and the crime think analysis titled, quote, not falling for it, unquote, note already posted to Anarchist News. Okay, well, I get to talk about my assessment of crime think every week, which is too much, really, but it's certainly a good sign about the legs and energy of the folks producing for the project. Here, I have to say that Alanis, one of the voices for this episode, is for me so indicative of crime think stylistic choices that are probably great for most people, but absolutely are not for me. The enthusiasm seems rehearsed, prescribed, and circumscribed. Anyone writing or reading for a podcast will balance sincere emoting with getting the words read, speaking clearly, making sense to strangers, etc. For crime think, add to that the requirement that one be excited and congratulatory about the right things, TM, which are always the same things, canned, predictable. But of course, that implies stability and reliability, which crime think also provides. And for some folks, that is a fine trade-off. The final straw, colonization and revolt, E. Ornelas on the radical potentials of Le Guin's The Word for World is Forest. 56 minutes. Sean Swain starts at 5:45, and he has a monumentally phantasmagoric grand swindle idea he's willing to share with us. Listen for an explanation of the magic and wonder of wild boars. The bulk of this episode is about a talk by E. Ornelas, with not great sound quality, on an anti- and decolonial reading of one of Le Guin's less anarchist-celebrated novellas. First published, by the way, in Again Dangerous Visions, edited by Harlan Ellison, the Bob Black of U.S. science fiction. Anyway, science fiction and its liberal but perverted cousin, speculative fiction, are good. I have spoken. Anarchy Bang, introducing episode 48, Conflict. Quote, this is the end. Not the end of talking, of course, but the end of this particular project of trying to talk at and with people, especially about anarchism, especially with phones. But mostly the project exceeded the format and the audience and excitement built as much as we could have reasonably expected, given how niche our project was. This was particularly funny when we got callers who had no idea what anarchism is. This week, we are going to discuss conflict. It seems all anarchists would be into conflict, but interpersonal, gut-wrenching, gnarly self-abnegation doesn't seem to be every person's favorite. Why is that? And for those who seem to be cheerleaders for conflict, what has it done for you? Has it cleared your acne? Or do you just address books? What is the difference between conflict and hashtag attack, or insurrection, or the fucking revolution as you see fit?
Topic of the week, endings. I end projects, as does everyone. I might let one fade away with nary an update until it has long been forgotten, or they will kind of sputter on for a couple years while I kind of wish someone else would pick one of them up, or that something would give it a gust of air and bring it back to life. The anvil was like that. How do you keep a totally worthwhile project going when you are kind of tapped out on it? This topic of the week is about endings, how to do them right, examples of doing them wrong, and how does one tell the difference?
Well, of course, the reason this is coming up right now is because consciously this weekend represent the end of the project Anarchy Bang, which was an attempt at doing a call-in show and sort of like having an out loud conversation about anarchist topics. And, you know, mostly it was successful when we had good people who were present who wanted to talk about anarchist projects. And it got harder and harder to count on callers who, when they called in, could oftentimes have a great conversation, but it was so inconsistent. You know, we just had weeks where it was just like feeling like you were alone in the world. So I had committed to the experiment for a year, and meaning the length of time for the subscription for the service that we used for it. And that year is coming to an end, and I decided that due to my sanity and the amount of work involved, that it was time to put that project to bed, to end it, with the caveat that maybe in the future we'll pick it back up, which is, of course, why you don't rely on an outside service. And all of the episodes got migrated to our own domain name that we owned, which is why later we could actually pick up with a different service or figure out a totally different tech solution to the problem. Anyways, so that's an example of, like, a good ending, I guess. But, you know, the obvious question is, like, what other projects should we have this kind of conscious thinking about? You know, I've, in my head and in local conversations, I've talked about ending Anarchist News, what that would entail as an example. But really, like, the question is, what other things would perhaps we like to see consciously end?
Oh, that's the conversation?
How to do them right, examples of doing them wrong, and how does one tell the difference?
That's not picking projects to end. That's talking about endings conceptually.
Okay, that's fine. Go on.
I like this conversation because I don't feel like it's one that happens very often. I think endings happen to things. I don't think that endings are very often intentional or planned or chosen.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially not in our world. I think things just kind of sputter out of existence. They're there and then they're not one day. Or they're there, sure. And then they're less, and then they're less. And in my experience, things exist in name only for a very long time.
Yeah.
Before someone actually says, no, this thing is not a thing anymore. And I think that there's actually a lot of power in saying, we're done now.
Yeah.
This is why we started this. This is what we were trying to accomplish. This is how we succeeded. This is how we failed. This is what we wish we'd done differently.
Is there an example of a project you've been involved in that ended well?
No. I don't think so.
Okay.
I am surrounded by too many, or I frequently work with too many strong-willed people who are going to hold on by their fingernails. Do I have an example of this? No, I don't. Well, I think we chose correctly to stop the East Bay Anarchist Book Fair. I think we should.
Did we do three of them all together?
I don't remember. That was five.
Okay, something.
Part of me thinks maybe we should have not done the last year. And last year should have been the year before.
Hmm.
We didn't talk about not doing it anymore. And every once in a while, I wonder if we should have done that. You know, like, we didn't make an announcement that says, we're not doing it anymore, and this is why. And we're, you know, we just stopped.
Yeah.
But mostly for a singular annual event, I thought that was appropriate. As opposed to plenty of annual events that still go on that you're not sure why they do.
Sure.
And I think people can always tell the difference between an event that is a living part of the world, an event that has already died and nobody has bothered to bury it.
I don't know. That's hard.
No, I mean, I think outsiders can always tell the difference. Not necessarily people inside the project. But maybe that's not what you meant. Go ahead.
I'm not sure the Bay Area Book Fair has much life to it as an event. The presentations are scattered all over. There's no longer really a great venue for it. And, I mean, the last year felt bleak. But, of course, you know, as a vendor, it's still, like, we still did vending. We still accomplished that part of it.
Right.
But to the extent to which it grew into, like, sort of almost a singular Bay Area anarchist event, that's gone.
So then perhaps that's an indication that it's time for it to be over. perhaps, and I find this happens often, the organizers understand this and are adjusting accordingly, but they don't talk about it.
Of course.
We have a different set of expectations. We're trying to accomplish a different thing than we have in the past.
Right.
The landscape has changed. The context has changed. What is possible has changed. And in the face of those changes, we've become this thing. But no one ever does that. Instead, all those of us who have been around for 20 years look around and go, wow, this is sad.
Well, what happened?
Right. What happened? Because it used to be. But, you know, we can say that a lot about a lot of things that they used to be. So we talk so often about how things get started, and that's useful in other people starting their projects. But we don't talk so often about how things end, and that's also would be incredibly useful to people.
Talk about why the East Bay Anarchist Book Fair ended.
It was a combination of energy level of the organizers involved.
Which I would probably be the number one reason for most things to end.
You think that is?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's probably true. People are tired. Yeah. It was a big thing. We did it with a small group of people. The venue, Humanist Hall, was having lots of issues with the city in the last year that we were doing it. And so they were scrutinizing us in a way that was inconvenient. And I'm not going to make it sound any worse than that.
It also was a limitation of the project was the fact that the venue was relatively small.
Yeah. Yes. But just to be clear, in general, the Humanist Hall people were actually really good to us.
Yeah.
I would speak fondly of David to anyone. The venue was only the size that it was. At the time, it being in the fall was challenging.
We wanted to have discussions outside under canopies, which got chilly and sort of not wonderful.
Yeah. So we either needed to do it early when the weather was better, which meant we lost like half of our audience because everyone was working, or we did it later when those people weren't working and the weather sucked.
Yeah.
And it got cold really fast. And I believe there was one where it rained all day, which is entirely appropriate for this part of the country at this time of year. It's supposed to rain every damn day. And as things became a little more fractured politically in the Bay Area, and other people's energies went towards other political projects that weren't these anarchist projects, that also changed the participants. So we were having people table that perhaps in a perfect world, we wouldn't necessarily want to table, and sticking with the spirit of what an anarchist book fair meant to us. And that was frustrating. And we did that a little bit 1 year and then a lot the last year. And I didn't want to do that again.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, ultimately it was hard because many of the tablers were on the one side of the mouth coming to the event, tabling, blah, blah, blah. On the other side of their mouth were basically calling us names, bad-mouthing us, and sort of bragging about how they were using us for our labor.
So, I don't know. There were probably more reasons. That's what I can think of. And plenty of people were very clear that they were sad that it was ending, that there was a thing happening there that had been lost a long time ago at larger book fairs, which of course was part of the reason why we started it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Everything has a season, I guess. If I can wax poetic a little bit.
Yeah. I have a hard time with it because I think that, at some point, the number of people who are helping us make stuff happen seem to shrink. And it's hard to put that any place other than the fact that the Bay Area was just becoming too fucking expensive. We no longer got new blood here. This is a big town that no one can afford to live in.
Yeah.
And especially when you start to add the additional constraints of, you know, whose politics we like, who has free time, who, you know, all of these things just started to stack up. And, you know, as I would say then and as I would say now, the Bay Area is not the place I would recommend to come to if you want to live, if you want to be around a thriving anarchist space.
Yeah, no.
And so we've started to constrain some of our projects as a result.
Yeah, for sure.
There are not enough people.
No. This is not, people are not coming here bright and starry-eyed anymore because, you know, there's like three places they can afford to live and they're full up or they're not near here, so.
And even the activism, you know, obviously there's still a loud-seeming activist projects that live in the Bay Area, but they, I mean, if I were hunting for them, I'm not sure I'd know where to find them.
Yeah. I don't pay attention, so
yeah.
I can imagine. The thing that was always interesting to me about New York was that there were lots of political people who had the energy and wanted to do things, but space was nearly impossible to hang on to, and people did not live in big group houses like they do in the Midwest or in Philadelphia.
Well, because the houses were too small.
Right, because everybody shares a small apartment or... it was always hard there. It was always hard.
Yes.
And I see similar things now here because it's not just the cost of housing that goes up, it's the cost of everything that goes up.
Yeah.
And so, like, the long haul, which is... whose building is owned by a land trust, has raised the rent and inconsistent and by their standards, unacceptable amount in a very short amount of time. That's just all around.
Most of the problems with the public spaces that do exist in the radical space here in the East Bay is that all of them quickly become impoverished social services venues. And essentially the radical scene, to the extent to which it does have space, shares that space with homeless populations whose needs and whose communication styles and all the rest quickly chase away everyone else.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, that's mostly the case of the long haul, but even the Omni has a very serious problem. And, you know, mostly this is about the fact that the radical community is not mature enough to be able to handle the fact that there's a whole bunch of people who might be interested in the what the space is about or whatever, but has so much need that overwhelms any other conversation.
Mm. Yeah. That's what I got for endings.
Endings. Well, yeah. So this week, make sure to check out Anarchy Bang. You can still check it out. All the archives are at anarchybang.com. The goal was to have engaged topical conversations about the anarchist space and to be more or less semi-public about it. And thank you very much for this conversation, Ariel.
Thank you, Aragorn.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel. There was no editorial. The What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room linked on ANews.